Turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Good to be with y'all. It's good to see everybody. I really appreciated Larry's song choices that focused on the King and the Kingdom. You know, it's really what the Gospel of Matthew focuses on, and that's what this sermon focuses on that we're talking about here in Matthew chapters 5 through 7 that we're looking at this month, is that we have a King and that we need to be singing praise the Lord to Him. I thought it was interesting, the second song that we sang together, we made a pretty bold claim. We said we will worship Him in righteousness. That's pretty big, you know? Maybe sometimes we just sing songs without thinking about them. But that song was huge. We were making very bold assertions about what we are and who we are and what we're going to do in our lives in relation to our King and our God. And so as we think about worshiping Him in righteousness and living a righteous life, that's what we want to really talk about tonight as we get into kind of the second part of this sermon, as we're talking about the gospel of the kingdom. This is kind of where we're at. We're in the second of four lessons thinking about what Jesus said in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. And so tonight we want to talk about righteousness that exceeds. You know, at the end of chapter 5 and verse 16, we're told this great thing. Kingdom citizens are this way. They do these things. This is the type of people they are. They're meek, they're lowly, poor in spirit, they mourn over their sin, they hunger and thirst for righteousness, they care about God and His things and all that, and they're meek and they, what else do they do? They're peacemakers and all this great stuff. This is who Christians are. And then Jesus goes on and says, you people who are going to be like this, if you're going to be in My kingdom, you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. That's a big mission. Now how are we going to fulfill that? In a practical day-to-day sense, what does it look like to be merciful? What does it look like to be pure in heart? What does it look like to be all these things that Jesus said I'm supposed to be? And that's what really this next part is about, where Jesus shows us what it is to be righteous before God and to live a life of righteousness. Now, Jesus takes a moment in verses 17 through 19 to tell us, look, don't think that I came here to throw out everything that God already said. I didn't come to abolish the law of the prophets, verse 17. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus is saying the law is a big deal. You need to keep the law. But then in verse 20, He brings us to what His real point is in the following scriptures, the rest of this chapter. He says, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven." So that's what we want to think about tonight, is righteousness that exceeds. That exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees. This kind of half righteousness, saying you love God, saying you want to serve Him, saying you want to do what's right, but not really living like it. If you remember, last week we talked about what righteousness is, and righteousness is a right relationship or a right standing with God. So you're over here and God's over there. If you want to be righteous, you want to get closer and closer to God to where you are in a right relationship with God, that you match up with Him and His standards. And so that's what we're talking about, is real righteousness, not fake righteousness of people who say they're serving God but really aren't. If we're going to be the light of the world, then we need to have God's light in us. And that's an important job, by the way, being the light of the world. I don't know how many of you guys have met Dan Blimline, but Dan became a Christian within the last year. And he and I were talking one time, and he was just talking about people in his life that helped him come to the Lord. And it was just a few weeks after he'd been baptized. He's like, you know, it's kind of like that Coldplay song. I was like, what? Lights will guide you home. And that's so true. I don't think that's what Chris Martin and all those guys were thinking of. But that's what Jesus said. That lights will guide you home. And if we are that light of the world, we need to be living lives of righteousness. Better righteousness than the religious community at large. But the righteousness that comes from God. So that people will see His light and be led home to Him. So we're going to try to think about some of these things. And this is kind of an outline of the righteousness that exceeds. It seems to me there are kind of three principles, and they're probably a lot more that you see in here. But three principles, each with a couple of examples that illustrate the principle. One is that the righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees is that it comes from the heart. You know, the Pharisees had a terrible time with not practicing religion that came from their heart. They just were all about what it looked like. They didn't care about what was going on inside. And Jesus said, you guys are filthy inside. You clean up the outside of tombs, but inside are dead people. Why are you spending so much time cleaning up the outside when your inside is so nasty? So Jesus teaches us that righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, of religious hypocrisy, is heart-based. Another thing we see is that it's a difficult standard. The righteousness that goes above most religious people is not going to be easy. It's going to be a challenge for us. And then the third thing that we see is it's radical. It's nothing like anything you've ever heard or anything you had ever thought of. The righteousness of the kingdom of heaven, the righteousness that Jesus wants us to practice, is beyond what we would even imagine. And so we need to come again tonight with the ear of a disciple to listen to Jesus and what He has to teach us about real righteousness and how to be in a right relationship with God. That doesn't mean that the things Jesus says that this is works-based salvation, but Jesus is saying if you're going to be in this kingdom, you can't coexist with God and not really truly practice the righteousness that is better than the righteousness of people of this world. All right, before we go into our text, let's if you would bow your heads and we're going to pray together before we start. Lord, we thank You that You've left us Your Word to give us all that we need. We're thankful for the Gospel that teaches us what we need and teaches us how we can be saved and teaches us how we can be what You've made us to be. And God, we just pray that You would give us humble hearts and that You would give us the ear of a disciple as we come before You now and listen to Your words. Help us all, God, and be with us. Amen. Alright, so first of all, let's think about this idea of righteousness of the heart in a couple of different areas where righteousness starts in the heart. The righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees begins in the heart. So what about anger? Or anger was the only one word thing I could think of to kind of wrap up this first section. So there's this question. What is the right way? What's the righteous way to deal with confrontation and frustration with others? Because we all deal with that. People at school, whether it's your friends or your teachers. People at work, co-workers or boss. People in your family. People at Walmart. People on 285. You've got people that you come in contact with, right? And you want to collide with them. What do we need to do about that? Let's start reading verse 21. Jesus says, "You have heard that the ancients were told, 'You shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court.' But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, 'You good for nothing,' shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law, while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last cent." So what do the Pharisees say about this? Let's start with that. The not good righteousness. What do they have to say? Well, first off, they would say, okay, so you get mad at somebody, you've got a little problem with them, they get mad at you, you get mad at them, you're not talking more, just don't kill them. I mean, just don't kill them. Other than that, you're okay because the law says, shall not kill. You shall not murder, you know. So just don't kill them and you're in good shape. All right? You can get a little dartboard and put their face on it, all that kind of stuff, but just don't kill them. Okay? They also would say something like, you know, hey, maybe inflicting a little pain with words, you're not killing them, so that's cool. No big deal. You can say a few things that would hurt them either to their face or behind their back, and that's okay. But just don't kill them because that's all that matters, right? And another thing is, you know, okay, let's say that there's kind of this neutrality in your relationship. You know, you're not just like totally at each other's throats. But you don't have to go and like patch things up with them. If they said something that was mean to you and you didn't like, or you did something that wasn't the best thing and they hold a grudge against you and they're mad at you and you're mad at them. Can you imagine that happening? That would be crazy. But if this were to happen, hypothetically, you don't have to do anything about it. You can just kind of hang back. It's no big deal. Because you're not killing them. So it's no big deal. Those are the types of things that the Pharisees would say, right? What does Jesus say about whenever we come into conflict with other people? And I want you to think about who are some people that you're in conflict with right now. Because I imagine there are people in here that you're in conflict. You may not think about it that way, but maybe here's a good kind of test. If you saw them in a restaurant, what would you do? Would you do the, like, act like you didn't see, you know? Or would you give them a really dirty look? Or would you go up and say something really mean to them? Maybe even better, what kinds of thoughts do you have whenever you see their latest post on Facebook? What do you think about that person? What does that bring to mind? You know, oh, I can't stand them. Oh, I can't believe that. You know, like that. Is that the kind of stuff you think? Because if so, then you're in conflict with them. You may not be having fights every night, but you're in conflict with that person. You have anger toward that person. You got a problem. So what does Jesus say about that? Jesus says that the problem is not killing people. That's not the issue. The problem is what's going on in your heart. Isn't that what Jesus says? There in verse 22, "But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty." And by the way, I don't think Jesus is just saying, like, oh, he used these court things. It's like, oh, you're going to be guilty in human court. He's talking about his court, because he's the one who's looking at our hearts. And you're going to be guilty before him if you have anger in your heart towards someone else. If you have problems with your brethren and you're not doing your part to be a peacemaker, you're condemned in Jesus' eyes. Jesus also tells us that really murder and thinking or speaking evil, same thing. You might as well kill them. I'm not advocating killing everyone you're angry with, but you might as well in Jesus' eyes, because you're going to be judged either way. So don't think that, oh, I'm not fighting that person physically, or oh, I'm not killing them, or oh, I'm not even saying anything bad about them. If you're thinking it in your heart, then you might as well be doing it. Because righteousness, the real righteousness that Jesus calls us to, is righteousness that starts in the heart. It's not just out here in our hands. It's in the heart. And that's always been the case, all through God's law. And so this is not okay to have problems with people and to say, we're mad at each other, but I'm not going to do anything about it. Tell you what, Jesus even says, if you're mad at someone or someone's mad at you, you've got a problem and you haven't done your part to fix it. By the way, sometimes you may try to fix it, it may not work. We're not talking about that. But if you have not done your part to fix it, then Jesus says you shouldn't even come to church. That's what he says. Leave your gift at the altar and you go and first be reconciled to him. Okay, so here, for those of you who are thinking of someone that you have problems with, I'm going to tell you to do something that probably you'll never get told to do again. So you can pull out your cell phone and text whoever it is right now. And I'm serious. If you need to do this and you can think of someone, you need to pull out your phone right now and text them and tell them, hey, we need to talk, or hey, I'm sorry, or whatever it is. So this is your one freebie text without being in trouble in church. But seriously, if you've got problems with someone, what are you doing here? If you haven't done your part in patching up that relationship, Jesus says it's all about the heart. It's about that anger, that lack of peace between you and others. All right, so let's look at the next issue that Jesus gets into in the text, and that's lust. Verse 27. And our question now is, okay, so I'm a human being, so I have these sexual impulses and this drive and these desires. What am I supposed to do about that? What am I supposed to do? Let's look at what Jesus says. Verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Can I just say, by the way, I feel like I've been in studies or had discussions about this passage way too much. Like this, I feel like every summer, I mean, you guys know for the past couple of summers, I spent a lot of time in camps and stuff. This is like all the time we're talking about this passage. Somehow, some way, we Christians do not get this. And we claim to be Christians, but somehow we don't get this, that lust is not okay. Some people say it is. I mean, a lot of doctors would say it. A lot of people who claim to be religious, godly people would even say it. The Pharisees would say things like that. Because the issue is not the lust. The issue is what you touch. So just don't touch and you're okay. Just don't do anything with your body. Don't have sexual intercourse, relations with another human being, and you're okay. You can do whatever you want in here and in here, just don't do it physically, and you're fine. What happens in your mind stays in your mind. What happens in your heart stays in your heart, because you're not doing anything. You don't have any consequences. No diseases, no pregnancies, nothing like that. So no harm, no foul. It's just in your head, right? It's not hurting anybody. That's being righteous. Unrighteous people, they sleep around, but I'm righteous. I don't do that. Is that what Jesus says? You know, Jesus says that the problem is not intercourse. The problem is not the physical act of sexual relations. The problem is lust in your heart. That's the problem. And that's what needs to be addressed. It's not all this outward stuff. Yeah, that's a problem, but it was a problem way before you ever did anything with your body. It's a problem the moment you do something with your heart and when you do something in your mind. That's when it's a problem. And it's not okay for us to just say, oh, I'm struggling with this. That's like, that means I'm just doing it all the time and I feel bad about it. That's all that means. We've got to wrestle with this. And Jesus tells us the radical nature of how we wrestle with the problem of sexual temptation and lust. He says, if your eye is causing you to sin, cut it out. Lust has to be cut off, cut out, and thrown away. Because here's what we do with this, right? We believe part of what Jesus said. Okay, I know lust is a problem. So, I'll take my eye out, right? I'm not going to look at this anymore. Whatever your eye is, right? You have lots of eyes. Maybe it's your computer. Maybe it's books. Maybe it's movies. Maybe it's TV. Maybe it's all these, whatever it is. Maybe it's a person at your job who's inciting you to lust. Or whatever it is, right? You've got all these things that cause you to lust. And by the way, this isn't a male-only problem, right? I mean, there are all kinds of like book series and movie series that may not appeal to the things that appeal to guys, but they appeal to things for women too. Sexually, inciting lustful thoughts, desiring something that does not belong to me or someone that does not belong to me. That's just as wrong. Okay, so I've done step one. I've plucked out my eye, right? So here's what we like to do. I'll save that for later. Now, I'm good right now because I've done what Jesus said. But then someday, we put it back in. We save it for a rainy day when we're really depressed, when we're really lonely, or when I really, really have a strong temptation, or I'm really angry, I really whatever it is that you want that for. We don't do what Jesus said, and that is to tear it out and throw it away. Whatever it is that's causing you to sin in lust, you got to get rid of it. Don't be like the Pharisees, like, it's no big deal, it's okay to lust and all that. It's not okay. Jesus is not okay with that because Jesus is primarily concerned with the heart. And so we've got to clean up the heart. That's what Jesus said. And that's what we got to do. All right, the next principle that we see as we go on in the sermon is that righteousness is difficult. This is not going to be an easy thing for us to do, to practice the righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees. It's going to be tough. And I think we see that first off in verses 31 and 32 where Jesus talks about marriage. And what's the right way to look at marriage and consequently divorce? Let's read verses 31 and 32. Jesus says, "It was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except for the reason of unchastity, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery." All right, so what would you say? If you're a good old every Sabbath day Pharisee, what kinds of things would you say about divorce and marriage and stuff like that? Like, how long do you have to stay married? And what are the circumstances whenever you can end a marriage, you know? And who can get married to who and all that kind of stuff? You know, how do you answer these questions, right? So here's the Pharisee answer. And by the way, if you want more on this, we're not going to be able to go into all the things that need to be talked about with marriage. But if you want to learn more about this, Matthew chapter 19, Jesus expounds on some of these things more. But I mean, if you're not happy, just get out. If she's not making you happy, get out. It's no problem. Just get a new one. Get another one. Whatever. But don't forget the papers, right? Because that is the most important thing. That's what Moses said. Give her a certificate of divorce. And by the way, that's true. This wasn't just the Pharisees' idea. It is true. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, Moses, by God's direction, gave the law that if you were divorcing your wife, you're supposed to give her a paper, a certificate of divorce. But I challenge you to go back, and again, we don't have time to go back into all this, but I challenge you to go back to Deuteronomy 24 and see what does it look like is really being said in that law. Is it saying, "Nah, I don't like you anymore. Get out. Here's your paper," you know. Is it that? Or this idea of some sort of indecency more than just, I don't like you, your cooking's boring, I don't like your jokes anymore, or whatever. That's not the reason, I don't believe. Again, that's Deuteronomy 24 if you want to check out the original context of that quote. But anyway, so those are the kinds of things that the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees would say. What does Jesus say? Jesus says there's only one cause for divorce. And he does give that caveat. There's one reason for divorce, and that is unfaithfulness. If your partner forsakes you and forsakes the marriage bond, then Jesus gives the allowance that, yes, you can sever that marriage bond. But Jesus brings out a really important point here. You know, marriage sometimes may be tough, and you may not like it, and it may be hard, and it may make you sad, and you may, whatever, like that may happen to you. You may be like, I don't want to be in this. Well, okay, fair enough. But look at the impact of a divorce. Everyone who divorces his wife, and we're just going to skip over the allowance and read this, it's kind of like sense. Everyone who divorces his wife makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So I say, okay, tired of it, don't want to do it, done, right? So then, wife, now she becomes an adulteress because she gets married to somebody else. Oh, by the way, he's an adulteress too. Now, I'm happy. I'm good. I'm free. I'm doing what I want to do over here. But now these people are adulterers, right? They're sinners. They're going to be condemned before God because of my actions. But I don't care because this is all about me. This is about what I want, not about them or what helps them. And Jesus shows us that really the issue with divorce is totally selfish. It's people saying, I'm not happy. I don't like this, so I want to just get out. And Jesus says, that's not okay. Your happiness isn't a big deal. Jesus does not care if you're happy when it comes to His righteousness. If it's righteousness or happiness, we must always choose righteousness. And Jesus shows us that we've got to replace selfishness with faithfulness. Now, which one is easier? Doing whatever you want, whenever you want to do it? Or being committed and faithful in a relationship to one person? Righteousness is hard. This is a difficult teaching. I mean, there are some cultures, I don't know if you could imagine this, but there are some cultures where people just get divorced and married all the time. Wouldn't that be crazy? A bunch of selfish people that don't care about the righteousness of God and don't care a bit about God's holy institution of marriage. It's going to be hard, but you just got to deal with it. That's what Jesus is teaching. How about honesty? How honest do I have to be to maintain my righteousness? Because honesty is pretty hard, isn't it? I mean, is it easy to be honest at school whenever you know you've got the chance to cheat off somebody else or to take their paper or to say that, come up with a better lie than my dog ate my homework or whatever it is you're going to say? That's pretty hard not to lie, to be an honest person. What about at the job? Isn't it hard to not lie to your boss about whatever it is, a deadline you've got to meet, or how many hours you were at this place, or how long your lunch was, or whatever? It's hard to be honest like we need to be. How about in our families? It's hard to be honest and open sometimes with what's going on with us and with them, and how, you know, it's just hard to be honest sometimes. What would the Pharisees say? Let's go on and read verses 33 through 37. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of His feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil. So what do the Pharisees say? Okay, so some oaths you have to keep, others you don't. There's kind of this system of oath keeping. You can see that actually in Matthew chapter 23. Pharisees say, okay, so gold or temple of y'all. If you swear by the gold of the temple, you got to keep it. If you swear by the temple, you know, don't worry about it. If you do, it's cool. If you don't, it's cool too. Okay, so you got to swear by the altar or the offering on the altar. If you do by one, that's, you know, you should keep that. The other one, no big deal, right? So there's kind of this system of oath keeping, and some things you've got to keep, some things you don't. So just make sure you make the right oath. If you don't really care, then you can just make your little, you know, caveat so that you don't have to keep your promise. And honesty is really one of those things that you don't want to always say, right? I mean, does this make me look fat? Who wants to answer that question, right? For anybody. So, tell a little lie. It's no big deal, you know? No big deal. That's the way that most religious people think. Now, big things, you know, if you're like a witness or something, or I don't know what other things you have to be honest about in the world's eyes, but you know, there's a few things that you really need to be honest about. But other than that, you know, your word is kind of a subjective thing anyway, so don't worry about it. But Jesus, what's his answer toward that? First off, Jesus says some pretty strong things, right? He says anything beyond yes and no is of evil. Anything beyond yes and no is evil. So does that mean that ever taking an oath is a sin? I don't believe so. Just because when you look at other passages, the Holy Spirit inspires Paul to take oaths in his writings. And these are a couple of passages. There's a couple others also where Paul says, I call God to witness and things like that as he's taking oaths. So I don't believe what Jesus is saying here is that if you ever make a promise or your marriage vows were a sin because you were vowing something. I don't believe that's what Jesus is teaching here. But I do believe what he's saying is, you know, don't count on an oath to make your word better or worse. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm promising on the gold, or oh, I'm promising this, or oh, I'm promising by Jerusalem, or I'm promising by my very own head. Jesus is like, what good is that? You can't make one hair white or black. You have no control over that. And you can't use that to like swear and make your word more solid or something. Jesus teaches a really important principle that simple honesty is always necessary. Yes and no. Just be real. Be honest. And that can be one of the hardest things. You know, imagine one of your friends says, do you think I'm a Christian that's pleasing to God? And you know the life they're living is not. Is that easy to tell them that? Or what about whenever you know something that someone else needs, but you just won't hurt their feelings or whatever, you know? Honesty is difficult, but if we're going to practice the righteousness of the kingdom of Jesus, then we've got to be honest. We've got to be real. And we can't try to get around the truth whenever we speak to other people. That's wrong. And it ruins relationships. And that's another thing I should have pointed out earlier. Think about how all these things here in chapter 5, Jesus is teaching us not only about how to be in a right relationship with Him, but also how to be in a right relationship with other people. I mean, all of these things are all about relationships. Jesus is not only saving us, but He's also helping us to live a better life. And we know this if we ever try practicing it. So that brings us to our third principle. We've seen that righteousness comes from the heart. Things like anger and lust, we can't just say, oh, it's okay to have those because I'm not actually acting on them. We can't do that because it's of their heart. And Jesus wants our hearts. He always has and He always will. We've seen that righteousness is difficult. The righteousness that exceeds the hypocritical righteousness of the religious community around us is difficult. And also, we need to see that righteousness is a radical thing. Let's keep reading and see some of the most difficult teachings that Jesus makes. Verse 38, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. So here's our question. Do I have to put up with injustice? If people treat me in a wrong way, do I have to put up with that? And to what people and to what degree do I have to give up my own personal comfort and my own personal betterment for the sake of others? Because maybe if you've gotten to this part and you haven't walked away from Jesus, you're still sitting there on that hillside listening to Him, maybe you would believe, okay, I need to make some sacrifices for other people. But how far does that go? When can I stop? How much sacrifice do I have to make? Well, religious people, the Pharisees might say something like, hey, if somebody gives you evil, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. And Jesus sort of said it, actually. In the old law, that was the law. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. What was the point of that? Again, if you go back in the Old Testament and find those references where it talks about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, the point of that is not somebody gets you, you can get them back, which is kind of how we think about that. The point is, hey, if somebody pokes out your eye, you can't poke out both of theirs. There needs to be justice here. This isn't vengeance. We want justice for things that happen. And this was closely monitored by the judges and things like that that the Israelites had. So what had happened, though, by Jesus' day, is eye for an eye became eye for I chop your head off. You know what I mean? That's kind of the trade that happened there. Because I'm going to take out vengeance for myself. And so, hey, if somebody does you wrong, get them back. After all, that's justice. And justice has to be maintained. This is not fair. One time when I was a kid, so like I've told you guys, I grew up in like really country Alabama. And so the effect of this story is kind of lost in the fact that my redneck kid voice is gone. But anyway, like my aunt was playing baseball with us, and my aunt is dirty. I mean, like a dirty sports games player, always. So I like clobbered the ball. I mean, it was awesome. So I'm running, and then she picks up home plate. I'm like, what are you talking about? And so she's just holding it up and running away and like smacking me until my sister goes and gets the ball and tags me out. And so then at the end of it, I'm saying, it ain't fair, it ain't fair, it ain't fair. Uh-huh. That's pretty pathetic, right? How often do we do that, though? It ain't fair that this person said this thing about me behind my back. It ain't fair that this person took what was rightfully mine. It ain't fair that whatever. Who said it's supposed to be fair? And yet we have this idea that justice has to be maintained. I tell you what, I'm thankful that justice is not maintained. Because if justice were maintained, every one of us would be dead right now. But yet we want justice whenever someone does us wrong. Jesus says, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. The things that Jesus says, hey, if there's anybody evil, I'm telling you, don't resist that person. I mean, think about people in your life. You've got them. You've got them at work. You've got them in your family. You've got them in your neighborhood. You have evil people in your life. And Jesus says, you know what? You just got to deal with it. Don't try to fight fire with fire. You just got to deal with it. You may even have evil people, not just like in your family, like that weird uncle or cousin that comes around every once in a while, but like you may be sleeping in the same bed with somebody who does you wrong. You may have kids or parents that do you wrong. This may be, I don't know, that may be what you have to deal with. You can't fight fire with fire. You got to turn the other cheek, right? That's so any kind of hostility that you face, Jesus says, if you get slapped on the right cheek, turn the other. Now, the funny thing is, I don't know, there was some movie, I don't remember what it was, some like on TV, like Hallmark thing or something, and some like cowboy grandpa was like, well, son, you only got two cheeks, so after the second one, you can fight them out or whatever, right? That's not the point of what Jesus is saying. The point of this is you have to keep on enduring hostility, right? And this is also, by the way, is not saying that if somebody is just pummeling you, you just have to stand there always. Now, if your only options are hit them back or take a beating, then you've got to take a beating. That's what Jesus teaches. And there's no way around that. But we see the Apostle Paul, whenever he was being attacked and things like that, he would escape cities and go somewhere else preaching. So just to clarify that. But if you have hostility, you got to just turn the other cheek. If you're being exploited, if someone, you know, asks for your, what does he say there in verse 40, right? Anyone who wants to sue you to take your coat, let him have your shirt, let him have your coat. Whoever forces you to go with him 1 mile, you go with him two. The Roman soldiers basically were exploiting people because they would say, hey, I'm tired of carrying my stuff. Carry my stuff for 1 mile. You had to do that. He's saying, you know what I'm telling you to do? You do more than what you have to do. You do what a light in the dark place would do. And you shine and you show that person what a peacemaker looks like. You show them what meekness looks like. You show them what I look like. We've got to give above and beyond what we consider to be just. That's what Jesus did. Now, it's radical. It's crazy. This kind of thing. I mean, one person said that the morals of the kingdom of God were not made for men. They were made for nincompoops. That's what philosophers have said about the morals of Jesus. They are crazy. And people will tell you, you shouldn't get run over like that. You should stand up for yourself. No, you shouldn't. You should not and you cannot if you want to claim to be a member of the kingdom of heaven. Because Jesus didn't do that and neither can we. What's the answer? How far? What do I have to do? What do I have to do? You don't have to worry about what you have to do. Because how far that goes is all about the people around you. They're the ones that decide how far it goes. And the rest is in God's hands. So don't worry about it. Don't worry about how much do I have to sacrifice or how much injustice do I have to endure. You just have to endure. And Jesus will take care of the rest. What about love? Isn't that the hardest thing in the world? Love. We talk about it all the time. We make Disney movies about it all the time. But real love, That's a hard thing. Who do I have to love? And how far is that going to go? How far is that going to take me if I love people? Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For He causes His Son to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore you are to be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect." If you want to find some radical statements of Jesus, this is it. Because most religious people, even good people, would say, okay, you have to love. But you know, mostly you just need to love your friends, your family. You need to give, you need to share, you need to be kind, you need to say nice things. And basically anybody who's good to you, you need to be good to them. You pay back what you've been paid kind of thing, right? Also, your enemies, hate them. They hate you. So why would you not hate them and have anger towards them and have confrontation and want to fight back against them? You know, today is an interesting day to talk about this. Be honest with yourself. If some people were to walk through those doors dressed in certain ways, it looked like they live somewhere where there's more sand than grass, and that one of their cousins may be a terrorist or something, what would you do with that person? How would you feel? Sometimes I say, well, I wouldn't do anything. I mean, I'd be nice to them and everything. You know, maybe you would. Would you talk to them? Would you feel uneasy? Would you feel awkward? Would you feel a little bitter? Or would you love them? Because our country's built up this idea, these are our enemies, and we should hate them, and we can hate them, and that's okay. Remember, our citizenship is not in the United States of America. Our citizenship is in heaven. We're not allowed to hate people because they're from some certain country or some region or some religion. That doesn't matter. We have to love them, even if they outright claim to be our enemy. That was Jesus' answer to this question of who we have to love. He said, you got to love your enemies. Somebody curses you, you bless them back. Somebody hates you, you do good to them. Somebody persecutes you and does evil toward you, you be like Stephen, who there, as he was being stoned to death, prayed to God on behalf of his persecutors. Not just his persecutors, but his executioners. He prayed for those people. That's love. Whenever you take the heat, you take what other people are doing toward you and you say, I'm not going to retaliate. I'm not going to hate you back. Matter of fact, I'm not going to be neutral toward you. I'm going to love on you. Because you're my enemy. And that's what we have to do. We have to love our enemies. Jesus went on and points out that this isn't just like, oh, this is nice if you can do this. This is crucial. Because if we want to be righteous, if we want to be in a right relationship with God, then we've got to be more and more and more like God. You can't say, I'm in a relationship with you, but not take any sort of interest or do any of the things that that person does. We understand that in human terms. How much more so with God? And Jesus says, this is the way God is. He makes His sun shine on people who love Him, people who hate Him, people who serve Him, people who fight against Him. It doesn't matter. God loves and does good for these people. And you got to do that too. And you don't have a choice. And you can't, there's no exceptions to this. There's no limits to this. You can't think, oh, well, this person, this situation, this is different, this is unique. What are situations where maybe it's different, you know? You got somebody at work who's doing you wrong, you know? I can't love that person. I can't serve that person. You got somebody in your family who's doing you wrong. I can't love them. I can't serve them. I can tolerate them, and I'll take it from them. You know, I'm going to turn the other cheek. I'm not going to fight back. Do you ever believe I'm not going to serve that person? I'm not going to pray for them. I'm not going to do good for them. Somebody says, hey, how am I supposed to love my enemies? I'm a soldier, you know. My job is to hate the enemy. Or you fill in the blank with whatever other circumstance that might require you to hate the enemy. You say, sorry, Jesus, everything else, I'm with you. But this, I mean, my circumstances demand that I can't fulfill this command. This is going too far. Well, then you're done. And if you've put yourself in circumstances, or if you're in circumstances in which you cannot fulfill this command of Jesus to love your enemies, to do good to the people who hate you, to pray for your... If you say, my circumstances demand that I can't do that, then either you need to stop claiming to follow Jesus or you need to change your circumstances so that you can love your enemies and fulfill the command of Jesus. That's hard teaching. That's radical teaching that no one in this world would ever come up with. But that's because the source is something that no one else could be. Because Jesus wraps this section up at the end of chapter 5 with this statement. And He says it obviously in direct connection with this idea of love. But I just wonder if Jesus was thinking about more than just love whenever He said this. You know, just think about it. God just doesn't just do good things to us. He does good things based out of His heart. Just like we're supposed to have pure hearts. Not angry, not lustful, but pure. God doesn't just tell us to do difficult things. He does difficult things. You know, He knows what it's like to be married to someone that He doesn't like all the time. Because He's married to all of us. He knows what it's like to have to speak the truth that hurts because He gave us this. And so when we say, it's so hard, God says, I know. I did it first. And when we think, this is radical, this is ridiculous, no one does this, no one thinks this, God says, what did you expect? Because I don't want you to be like everybody else. I want you to be perfect. Just like I'm perfect. So my question for you tonight is, are you living a righteous life? And I hope maybe you're like me and you've seen that you haven't been living a righteous life and that you've got some changes you need to make. And not just in these specific areas, but in these principles. That you see that I'm not being all that I need to be. And that I want to be perfect. I want to be like my Heavenly Father. If that's true for you and you know you need to have some changes you need to make in your life, we're going to sing a song for your encouragement. And I really will be hoping and praying through this song that you'll come forward to ask for help while we stand and while we sing.